Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to Forever 35, a podcast about the things we do to take care of ourselves. I'm Kate Spencer.
I'm Dori Shafrir.
We are not experts.
We're just two friends who like to talk a lot about serums.
Hello, Kate. Dori. We're a little giggly today.
I mean, that's fine.
Let's just tell listeners.
Should we just get this out on the table?
Let's get it out. Let's get it out.
Let's just get it out.
Last night, I accidentally blocked Dori.
Wait, hold on. Let's tell the story.
Okay.
From the beginning.
I get a text message. Should I really open up my phone and just read the exchange? Hold on. It takes me about an hour to unlock my phone. So last night.
What were you doing when you got this
text? I actually think I was working on stuff for the podcast. Because we had been like chatting.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Sorry. I have to go back in time because I sent so many anxious texts in response. At 8:58 p.m. on Sunday, I get a text message from Dori Shafrir, my friend, podcast co-host. Did you, block me on Instagram? No question mark. I also love the
Well, the was supposed to imply like
what the fuck?
Well, like what the fuck, but also like I don't think you deliberately did this.
But admit it, was there like 1% that was like, is she sending me a passive aggressive message?
I was like, this would be so out of character for Kate. I know she doesn't like confrontation, but this is like next level. Because as I was saying before we started recording, blocking is aggressive. Like muting or even unfollowing is a better path. Like blocking is aggressive.
I didn't know that on Instagram you could see that you were blocked. I thought you just disappeared from Instagram for that person.
It doesn't. It's not like you are blocked by Kate Spencer, but when I tried to find you, nothing came up. And then when I went to the Forever 35 podcast account, which has our accounts linked in the profile, yours was like just... like it wasn't linked. I couldn't click on it.
Oh, God.
Let me back up and say that the whole reason I was trying to find Kate's account in the first place is because I was in the Forever 35 podcast account and I saw Kate's story pop up and I was looking at her story and she had posted something about how the joy of cooking has the best pancakes. And I was like, oh my God, that is so true because we used to make those pancakes when I was little out of the joy of cooking.
Me too.
Cookbook.
Same.
And I was going to respond to her, but then I was like, it'll be confusing if I respond from the Forever 35 podcast account because then it lives in that account. Anyway, I was overthinking it, but I was like, I'm going to go back to my
and then I was like,
regular account. So I go back to my personal account. And first I was like, that's weird. She usually shows up like first or second in my stories because I look at her stories so much and she wasn't there. And then I searched for her and I was like, that's weird. She's not coming up. Then I was like, oh my God, Kate.
Okay, so now is when I chime in to say, I don't know how I did this, but I think what happened is that I don't think I blocked you. I think I accidentally reported you for spam, and then it goes ahead and blocks the accounts that you report for spam. This is what I learned when I went over and clicked on your, when I like searched for you, and it was like, thanks for reporting the spam. We've blocked Dory's account. Like, I was like, holy fuck.
Then also, I got no notification about this.
Well, that's good, because then I went and literally, like, the last post on your page is a picture of you and Matt. And you're talking about a podcast you'd done about infertility.
We were guests on a podcast about infertility.
I hope that's not what I accidentally reported. So I think that I just had Instagram open and clicked something. I truly, or my kids could have been fucking with my phone. Actually, that... that is more possible.
What if Eleanor hates me?
My kids were like, quick, well, mom's not looking. Mom likes Dory more than us. Block her on Instagram.
And report her.
Report her for the spam. So anyway, I accidentally blocked Dory. Then when I unblocked, it didn't let me unreport spam. And then I was frantically like, how do I email Instagram and say this was an accident? Dory was laughing at me. I was able to unblock you, but then I had to unfollow you. I mean, I had to refollow you.
Yeah, and I had to refollow you.
Yeah, so we just followed each other on Instagram.
Yeah.
So I, of course, because I'm such a guilt-ridden monster with so much anxiety, I got to stop this negative self-talk. Guilt-ridden goddess. I will never get over the anxiety I feel that deep down you secretly think I blocked you on purpose.
No, I don't.
I truly was horrified as I wrote in my texts. I'm worried they're going to flag your account. I also was very worried. But anyway, that was fun.
And
that
I was like, fun. Nothing seems to have happened.
Oh, God.
Which actually sort of restored my faith in some sort of system. Just that, like, they must check.
I think they do.
And they decided that at Kate Spencer was just wantonly reporting me for spam.
How dare she?
How dare she?
So that was our exciting night last
night. That was pretty cool.
I was horrified because nothing makes my stomach drop like getting a text message that's like, hi, did you do something really shitty? Like, it's so, it terrifies me.
What if I hadn't said anything though?
We just silently, I think I would have figured it out because you disappeared from all my stuff.
Yeah.
And your story is always like first or second in my stories.
Yeah.
So, thanks. I mean,
you're my top eight.
I think, oh God, remember that?
Yeah.
Is that Friendster or MySpace? Anyway, listeners.
Sammy's nodding in recognition.
Yes, young Sammy.
Sammy was in like elementary school.
Sammy, were you born after MySpace? Poor Sammy. Sorry.
Oh, Sammy's not. Sorry.
Sammy grad is out of high school. Okay. So.
Barely.
I know. Boy, we are punchy today.
We are.
So anyway, listeners.
Well, it's Monday.
So that's what's been up. I accidentally blocked Dory. In positive news, I have been working on my social anxiety.
Yeah.
I've been forcing myself to talk to people.
How is that going?
It's going awesome. I'm good. 3 for 3 in successful.
Tell me the details. Because, now, were these strangers?
No. I have this horrible, like, mind game I play with myself where if, like, someone, like, I've convinced people don't like me or don't know who I am, even though we've interacted a bunch. Mm-hmm. And so instead of making an effort to be like, oh, hey, I'm Kate, we met, I like retreat and I don't look at them. This is how I've been like since childhood. Like if I had a crush on someone, I acted like I had never met them before. And I think it's just like fear of embarrassment or rejection or failure or whatever. So I have had some people that I are like acquaintances that I was like, I'm nervous around them or they don't like me. I've done something to make them not like me. What have I done? Meanwhile, these people have been nothing but nice to me.
Right. And
it's constructed in my brain.
Yes. And I've done that too, where I convince myself that someone doesn't like me. And then I feel like it becomes something of a self-fulfilling prophecy because then I act weird around them.
Dory, yes.
And so then they're like, oh, Dory hates me.
That's what it is. Then I act weird because I'm trying to act like I don't know them.
Yeah, exactly.
So in the past few weeks, I've made myself actively try to like talk to people, like to just be like, hey, how are you? Or introduce myself to people I don't know. Or like, because I'm in the world of like taking my kids to school, there's tons of like parents that you pass by. And I'm trying to just be more forward with introducing myself or interacting or just like greeting people and not assuming the worst, like not assuming that I've done something that everybody hates me for.
Totally.
And lo and behold, everyone's nice. Everyone is pleasant when they respond and we chat. And it goes great. I have not, it's been, and I don't know why the shift happened in me that I just was like, I'm fucking, I got to stop this cycle that I've been doing for 39 years. So it feels really good.
I'm really,
I did one today.
Happy for you.
I pushed myself to interact with somebody today and that went really well. So I'm trying to just be more confident in social situations. Maybe by the time I'm like 60, I'll be able to talk without having a panic attack.
Here's hoping.
Or not. So anyway, so that's what's been up with me. Social anxiety blocking you.
Yeah.
That's my week.
They're all connected.
They're all connected.
Well, my parents have been in town.
That is a fun but also stressful experience.
Yes. Fun but also stressful and exhausting. I took them to the Getty Villa yesterday.
I've never been there.
Where I'd never been. It's beautiful. And there's a, you know, there's a lot there. But I also haven't been sleeping very well. So I'd,
is that tied to anything, do you think?
I don't know. So I'd woken up at like 4:30 in the morning and hadn't been able to fall back asleep. So I was so tired and I was consciously like, don't be too cranky. Like let's just try not to be really irritable.
Yeah.
Like maybe semi irritable.
You're allowed to be a little tired, grumpy.
And then when we got back from the Getty Villa, we dropped my parents off at their Airbnb and I took like a 2-hour nap.
Amen.
Yeah. Also I went to the Korean spa with my mom.
Oh, you brought your mom?
I brought my mom. She requested it.
Oh, that's so nice. Mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. did send me a text about this. That was very exciting.
Yes.
Because.
So I didn't, the facialist that I normally go to was not available. So I went to a different facialist who I had never seen before. So I lie down and she, you know, turns on the bright light to like inspect my skin. And she's
spotlight.
Like, yeah. And she's like, are you wearing makeup? And I'm like, no. In my mind, I'm thinking, why would I have makeup on like before a facial? But maybe.
Sure, somebody does.
And then she was like, oh, because your skin is like so smooth and even. And I was like, oh, thank you. And then, so that started things off on a positive note for me.
Okay.
And then she was giving me a hand massage. And she saw my wedding, my engagement ring and my wedding ring. And she's like, whoa, you got married so young. And I was like, wait, I started laughing and I was like, how old do you think I am? And she was like, now, granted, she probably knocked this down a few years.
Okay.
But she said 27. And I
wow.
was like, I'm 41. And she, like, I know people will like try to make you feel good about
sure.
your age by saying you look young, but like, I detected genuine surprise.
When was the
in
last time
voice?
Someone thought you were in your 20s?
I don't get 20s very often.
I mean,
like, I'll get 30s.
Your skin is dewy and fresh and very smooth.
Thank
I mean, it
you.
Always looks that way. You do have the
Thanks.
Skin of a 27-year-old.
Oh, thank you. But yeah, that was like, that was especially nice. And as I think actually Jasmine Gill, I posted this in my Instagram story and Jasmine Guillory responded. Oh, and in my story, I was like, you know, it made me feel good. And of course I gave her a big tip, like whether or not that was the
her
intention.
Her plan worked.
Yeah. And Jasmine was like, look, it's better than facialists like negging you and making you feel like you have to buy a million products. And I was like, that's so true. She didn't push any products on me.
Yeah.
So like, great.
Great. Also, like, you felt good. Compliments.
I did.
Receive it.
I did. I did sort of overthink the whole, like, why do I have to glorify looking young? But then
Fair.
I was like, whatever.
Well, no, that is an interesting thing to reflect on. Mm-hmm. Why is youth valued as a compliment?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah,
I think because we, for better or worse, we equate youth with health. And so if you look youthful, it kind of implies that you're healthier. That is not necessarily true, of course. But I think in my mind, it's like, oh, well, I have been taking care of my skin. It is showing.
Yeah.
Great. So I'll take it.
I think that healthy skin on your face does not necessarily, we don't have to necessarily think that that means we look younger. I think it can mean
yeah,
that we
true.
Look like healthy.
Yeah.
Or just
totally.
That we're caring for ourselves.
Yeah.
I don't know. I getting away, look, this is something I would have to put into practice too, but getting away from using mm-hmm. you look so young as yeah. a compliment.
Yeah. Well, I think we don't have the vocabulary to communicate that in terms of, especially in terms of women's looks, without like complimenting how young you look is sort of the ultimate compliment.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be.
No.
But in our society.
What are some things we could say alternatively? You look so fresh. What if we didn't, weren't even complimenting looks? What if we just like, you look happy?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we don't even comment at all.
Maybe compliments are...
Now I'm spiraling.
Compliments are a tool of the patriarchy.
Well, I am having a little bit of like, why do we need to be commenting on anybody's looks at all? But again, I'm spiraling. We do exist in this society.
We do.
And so sometimes it's very hard to... You want to be a change agent, but also you can't help but actively engaging in our social constructs.
That is well said.
Ah, fuck. Okay. Boy...
Wow.
You know,
well, you look dewy and fresh.
Well, thank you. That's because I haven't showered since Saturday and I exercised this morning. So that's a natural sheen.
It's a glow.
It's a natural sweat sheen. My body odor is traveling to my nose right now.
Oh,
it's very potent.
It's not traveling to my nose.
Good, good, good.
I also like your top. I like the bright pink. Kate is wearing a bright pink tank top, workout top.
Thank you very much.
And I like a bright pink.
I feel good in it.
Yeah. Looks nice.
Thank you. I'm going to receive that compliment.
Great.
Thank you.
Should we take a quick break?
We got to do it.
Let's do it.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I like to care for my skin, duh. And it's also something that I do love to kind of like get into the research on.
You do have a curious mind.
Look, I have a curious mind. I can't help it.
You do.
But today's sponsor, OneSkin, has made that easy because they do their own fantastic research for their products. In fact, their products are scientifically validated to improve your skin's health while targeting the root cause of aging. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. It's the first ingredient proven to switch off the aging cells that cause lines, wrinkles, and thinning skin, and they've got several studies to back it up. They also have an amazing new sunscreen.
Ooh, our favorite.
Our fave. It's the OS1 Shield Protect and Repair SPF 30+. It's got the peptide. It's a mineral sunscreen. It's got antioxidants. It comes in tinted and untinted. I mean, like, what can't this thing do? I'm just saying. I love it. It's so easy to use, and I love that it's just like zoop, and it feels so nice going on. But don't take my word for it. OneSkin has over 4,000 five-star reviews and was recently recognized by Fast Company as one of the most innovative brands of 2024. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger
for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code FOREVER at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code FOREVER. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them, and please support your show and tell them we sent you.
Kate.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about underwear today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm excited. I mean, we're saying like, yeah, and really,
yeah,
I'm going to be like,
underwear.
Yeah, I buy my underwear at Costco. But we did get a listener voicemail about it.
Yeah, we did.
As a request for a topic for a mini episode. And listener, we're taking it to the main episode.
Oh, yeah.
So let me play that listener voicemail.
Hey, Kate and Dory. This is Sarah from Charleston, South Carolina, calling to ask you if you guys would consider doing an episode on underwear. I feel like the underwear that I was wearing in my 20s is definitely not the underwear that I'm wearing in my 30s. Not ready to go to granny panties. I've seen some really cool and interesting options out there. Also, what about exploring the frightening world of like control products, like girdles and Spanx? And like that whole like shapewear world. Anyway, think that'd be fun to hear you guys talk about. Hope everything is great. Keep on podding. Bye.
Thank you, Sarah. We are going to keep on podding.
Keep on podding.
Dory.
Yes.
Is the underwear that you wear now as a 41-year-old woman the same as you were in your 20s? I'm kind of chuckling because mine is the same.
It's not the same as I wore in my 20s, but I've been wearing this underwear for like the style of underwear, I should say. I do get new pairs of it.
Yeah, I didn't mean. Are you wearing the same pairs? Although some of mine are the same.
For like eight years or so.
Wow, you're a loyal underwear wearer.
Yeah, well, I think it was my friend Elizabeth who initially turned me on to this style of underwear. It's from The Gap.
Okay.
And it has gone through a couple of iterations.
All right.
They used to call it boy shorts.
Okay.
Then I think they decided that was probably weird, maybe offensive.
Yeah. Can't it just be like shorts?
Right. So then they changed it to girl shorts, which again, not ideal.
Gap, come on.
They're lace and
wait,
now,
but Dory.
Well, yes.
Now they're called the lace shorty.
Now they're called the lace shorty. I feel like they just can't get this right.
But the underwear is great.
But the underwear is great. They cover your ass, which is important to me. They come up just high enough. Like I don't want a super high rise pair of underwear, but I also don't want one that like doesn't even cover my pubic hair.
No, you gotta get all those pubes tucked in there.
Yeah. Yes. So that is one reason why I like this underwear. The other reason I like is because I have narrow hips and I basically have no ass and I have a larger waist. So underwear that will like fit me in the butt and hips is often too tight in the waist. Like
oh,
if it has like a thin elastic band, it will like cut into my waist and that is really uncomfortable. But because these are lace and they have like a thicker band, they don't cut into you. So,
and are they lacy? Is that itchy?
No.
Oh.
I mean, they have like they're cotton in the, you know, where your vagina rests.
Right. And the vagina resting spot?
The vagina rest. I guess that would also be the taint. Can we say that on this podcast?
We have no limits. Do you think that underwear designers call it the resting spot? Dory's headphones have fallen off. We got so excited talking about this. She's all tangled.
Oh, my God.
The vagina resting spot.
Yeah, the VRS.
Underwear designers, hire us.
I mean, I think that is probably the healthiest thing for your badge, right?
You gotta let it breathe.
Yeah, you gotta let it breathe.
I tell my kids not to wear underwear at night. I'm like, let that shit breathe.
Interesting. I don't find the lace itchy, but I mean, this could be like a your mileage may vary situation.
I might try those.
Yeah. Because
I'm very loyal to Carol Hockman.
Mm.
Carol sells her underwear at Costco, and that is what I wear.
So what cut are they?
I looked at them. I Googled them last night. They literally look like pants. There's so much coverage. They are like someone...
Are they like knee length?
No. They just
I'm picturing like Mormon undergarments.
No, they're briefs.
Oh, okay.
But they are, someone like referred to them as granny underwear. And I was like, oh, well, this is my sexy underwear. I don't have sex.
Are they cotton or lace?
No, I think they're like rayon. Oh. Not rayon. They're
stretchy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I don't like cotton underwear.
Mm-hmm.
These are like kind of stretchy and also not tight, but they feel like they stay put. I cannot handle the sensation of underwear riding up
my
body.
No.
I have never liked a thong. People have tried to convert me in my 20s. My friend, when she got married, she gave us all a pair of hanky-pankies at her bachelorette party. She was a big hanky-panky loyalist. She listens to the podcast. I don't know if she still is a hanky-panky loyalist. We just talked about the podcast last
night. I admit I wore thongs in my 20s.
Was that for sex appeal? Was it for you and how it felt under clothes? Did you not want people to see the lines of your underwear?
I think part of it was visible panty line.
Okay, now can we talk about this?
Mm-hmm.
Because my attitude is like, unless you're at like the fucking Oscars, which even then, but like, who cares?
I mean, Kate now as a 41-year-old, I don't care.
But
as
you did care.
As a 26-year-old, I cared. So I did wear a lot of thongs. They're not comfortable.
Some people do find them to be comfortable.
Yes, I am not one of them.
No, I'm not either. I've never been able to figure
it out. I wasn't like uncomfortable, but they're not the most comfortable.
There is a sensation of something creeping up your butthole.
Yes, that is not
all day long.
Yeah, it doesn't feel great. Yeah, I probably felt like they were a little sexier, but also like, who cares?
Is underwear a sexy thing for you?
Not
like,
really.
Do you ever like I once had someone suggest that to like feel more confident, I should like put on my sexiest underwear, like under my like regular clothes. That doesn't work. Like, I feel sexy when I'm like strapped in.
Yeah.
And like held by my underwear.
I feel like I'm like trying to think. I feel like the only times I would like consciously put on quote unquote sexy underwear, which I don't think I even own anymore, is like, when I was going on a date, mm-hmm. where I was like, maybe this is going to be the first time we fuck.
Whoa.
Yeah. Whoa. That's how I felt.
Wow, mm-hmm. Dory. And not to say if someone is listening who that is how they feel confident and great. That's awesome. I just, for some reason, operate that like comfort is the only thing I care about.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that's how I feel.
I have always been like that.
Well, you're a better person than I am.
That's what I'm trying to insinuate. That's why I accidentally blocked you on Instagram. I used to wear... So I worked at the store Patagonia in my 20s.
I've heard of it.
Yes, an outdoor clothing company. Mm-hmm. And so I would buy my underwear there.
Mm.
But I would get it at a discount. And I made that underwear last for like 10 to 12 years.
Wow.
And then I went and bought new Patagonia underwear. And they're like $20 a pop for one brief. But then I found my friend Carol Hockman's underwear at Costco, and I like it better than my Patagonia underwear. And it's $15 for a pack of five.
That's a great price.
It's a great deal. And I like, it's the best underwear I've ever owned. And I don't think it is particularly, like, I don't think anyone would see me in it and be like, yeah. But I do think they'd be like, respect for the performance of that underwear.
Okay.
It is solid coverage. And it doesn't ride up my butt.
How long do they last?
Well, I don't know. I haven't been buying them for that long. I just discovered them, I would say, within the year.
Okay.
And I had bought this cotton underwear at Costco that a friend recommended that I hated. It like stretched really fast. And I just don't love cotton underwear. So I'm not sure. I will keep test running it. They seem to last pretty well. And they haven't stretched out. Excuse me, that much. I think that's kind of my biggest problem with underwear is that they become stretchy. So they're like the size of a canvas bag that you could put your groceries in.
So that doesn't happen with these lace shorties. But what does happen with them and why I replace them probably every 3 to 4 years.
That's a pretty good long.
Yeah.
That's a long run.
But I do notice that sometimes they get holes in them.
Like around the elastic?
No, because they're lace.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I just, like, I'll see occasionally, like, a hole, and I'll be like, ugh. And then I don't know. Sometimes I feel like they just need to be replaced after like 3 to 4 years. But yeah, I think I get about 3 to 4 years out of them. And you can usually get them on sale for like, I don't know, $6 or $7.
These are cute. I'm looking at the lace shorties right now on the Gap website. They're cute.
Thanks.
They don't like, do they hold, do they, did, how do I say this? Do they like, I don't know how to say
Kate
this.
Kate is making a shape that sort of looks like a butt.
Yeah, I'm trying to, what I'm asking is like, I find when I wear like a short shaped underwear, mm-hmm. I think maybe this is also a flat ass problem. They don't kind of like ride the curve of my body. They just kind of like hang like a short. Do you find that? That's what I was trying to do by this hand waving motion.
Oh, sure. No, I don't find that they hang like a short because they're not that long.
Like, is there elastic around the butt cheek area? Dig in there right now, Dorian.
Trying to. Well, there is butt cheek below the line of the underwear.
Oh, okay, okay.
A little bit. Not a ton.
I want to try a pair of these.
Yeah, you should try them.
Okay.
All right.
Now, how do you feel? The listener also mentioned Spanx, girdles.
I don't do girdles.
I don't even know.
I don't do waist trainers.
Girdle, does that include a boob part?
Not necessarily.
Because I think I might have worn a girdle at my wedding. Or it was like, it started here and went, like started at the waist and I had to like button it all the way up. And then it had a strapless bra attached.
That sounds like shapewear.
Okay, yeah. But this was my wedding.
Yeah, I didn't wear any shapewear at my wedding because my dress had like this open back. So the parts that I would want to have had held in, like you would have been able to see the shapewear because sure. I would have wanted my stomach held in, but it would have had to be higher and then I couldn't wear it with that.
And as a person who was at your wedding, your shape was beautiful without the shapewear, which kind of leads me to my point. I kind of hate shapewear.
Yeah. So I would occasionally wear a Spanx.
Me too.
Like if I were going to a formal event or somewhere like I knew I was going to be photographed or something, but like, I'm kind of at the point now where I think it is mostly in my head.
I think you're right.
Like, does my looking like 2% better? No one notices. You're the only person who notices. It's imperceptible. And in the meantime, you are so uncomfortable for like 5 hours.
Yes. And I also found with Spanx and shapewear. I've also bought like knockoff Spanx at like Target and real Spanx that there's seams or my stomach like hangs over the top and it folds down so that it creates.
Well, did you ever get the ones that go up to your boobs?
Yes. But I do think ultimately our bodies look lovely without them.
Yes.
Now, again, I'm not judging anybody who wants to wear anything. Get in
Same.
There. But I think the comfort level, and I used to have to cover award shows for my job. I was an entertainment reporter and producer, and I would wear Spanx to a lot of these things because I was in dresses and it was not comfortable. Getting out of them was like,
it's not comfortable.
Peeling off a layer of cement.
By the way, I feel the same way about strapless bras.
I can't wear strapless bras.
I hate them.
Yeah.
Well,
in conclusion, we like comfort.
Yes.
No, I think, you know, I don't know. I think underwear, similar to skincare, it's such a personal, it's so personal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Some people underwear, they love, like, I would never suggest that you do what we say. It's just what feels good on our bodies and your body is totally different.
Totally.
But if you ever find yourself in the underwear aisle at Costco, check out my old friend Carol.
The listener who left us the original voicemail actually called back.
This listener followed up with a second voicemail. So let's just play that now.
Hey, it's Sarah again about the underwear question. If you do a mini app on undies, could you avoid using the word panties in it? Because I think that that's like a really... I feel like the only people who use the word panties are like middle-aged and older men who should not even be referring to women's underwear at any point. Bye.
First of all,
Sarah,
I take umbrage with the assumption that we would ever use the word panties.
I actively hate panties. When I had daughters, were I to have had sons, I would have made the same choice, but I call them underpants.
Yes.
And when people use panties, I correct them. It's like infantilizing and
it's the worst.
Gross.
So
panties. Ugh. I hate it so much. It also sounds dumb, but I hate the idea that women can't just have underwear.
I agree.
It's so stupid.
Glad anyway, we see
Sarah,
eye on
I'm glad you agree, but come on, Sarah, you know us. I'm not going
to
say panties.
Did you really have to tell us not to say it?
We were never. Although I almost did say granny.
Well, she said granny panties in her first voicemail.
Yeah, maybe that's like a...
I think granny panties is a term people use.
But we should start calling granny
panties. But
I
don't call them granny panties. I call them granny underwear.
Do you refer to your underwear as just underwear, underpants, undies? What do you
underwear.
Use? Okay. Now, if I said undies, is that as bad as panties?
No.
Okay. Because I do sometimes tell my kids to get their undies on.
I think that's fine.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad we cleared that up.
Well, let's take another break.
All right. Our guest today is Angela Garbus. Angela, welcome.
Thanks, Kate. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited you're here. As I have now told numerous people, your book wrecked me in the best way. Ugh. Like, just made me feel like it was like a mirror to my soul. It was truly...
Wow.
It's the best. So before we get into that, I just want to give our audience a brief introduction about who you are. Angela is a writer who lives with her family in Seattle. She was formerly the staff food writer at the Seattle newsweekly, The Stranger, and her 2015 feature titled "The More I Learn About Breast Milk, The More Amazed I Am" is the most read piece The Stranger has ever published, which is incredible. And Angela's new book, which is titled "Like a Mother, A Feminist Journey Through the Science and Culture of Pregnancy," is out now, came out in May.
Yes.
And that is the book that I am clinging to like a newborn baby, because it is...
It really just means, you know, when you write a book, you basically sit alone in a room for a year to a year and a half. So now that the book is out in the world, it's really exciting to me, and it means more than anything when someone shares with me that the book resonated with them or spoke to them or held a mirror up to their soul.
Like, it really, it's really did.
I couldn't imagine hearing anything better, so thank you.
It was... for me, it's the book I would say to anybody who's interested in having a child, curious about what the experience of childbirth and parenthood is like. It's a more valuable read than the books that we are often shown in, like, you know, the motherhood aisle of the bookstore, i.e. like What to Expect When You're Expecting or Dr. Sears, one of these books. This felt to me like the most honest and true documentation of what the experience of pregnancy and childbirth is really like.
Thanks.
Plus, you delve into like the science of what the hell is going on.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I tell people, and it's really true. I started sort of saying it as a one-off line that I wrote this book for all of us, but I really did.
Yeah.
You know, and when I was first conceiving it, no pun intended.
The birth puns must just flow.
Yeah. Especially, the gestation process of writing a book and all of that, all of it applies. But I mean, I really thought about it as the book at one point. I mean, I was going back through a journal that I was keeping at the time that I was writing it, and I was saying, I think I'm on to something here, right? And I wrote to myself, you know, am I writing the book that I wanted? Am I writing it for myself? Am I writing it to myself? You know, and then I think that sort of grew in my mind too. I was definitely writing it to my people.
Yeah.
You know, the people in my life who were texting me at 3 a.m. and I was texting them at 11 p.m. and we would all respond immediately because we were all awake.
Yeah. You know, like, I remember that time.
But we had so many questions, and so many of them were not like, tell me, like, what about Martha Sears' pregnancy salad? Like, they were not about, you know, that kind of thing. They were about, why am I still bleeding? Right. They were about, like, so what is cluster feeding? This thing where this baby is eating for like nonstop for like 8 hours, and I really want to stop. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Like, are they going to die? Like, I mean, really, I just felt like in pregnancy guidebooks, we talked about, everyone was telling me what I should or shouldn't do. Like, you know, don't put my cell phone too close to my belly. Too late. Like, I think, you know, both of my children probably came out knowing how to hold a smartphone.
Oh, yes.
But no one really talked about what was happening, you know, biologically, physically. And it's such a transformative process and a complex process, and I just wanted more information on that.
I think also creating a space that's free from judgment, because you talk a lot, especially in the beginning of the book, about there's an anecdote about a friend who's pregnant who wanted to have a drink but wanted to do it in private because they didn't want to be judged.
Yeah.
Another moment of like a man commenting on if you're carrying too many groceries, not offering to help,
right,
but just
no.
offering like, should you be doing that?
Yeah, you sure you should be carrying those?
Yes. Like everyone has an opinion, and it's really interesting how free people feel to share their judgment. I once had a woman, I was walking my newborn in the stroller in Los Angeles and had the stroller open so they could get some vitamin D, which was what the pediatrician had recommended. Mm-hmm. Like, give them 5 minutes of sun. A woman pulled over in her car and yelled at me and told me to get my baby covered. And I've never been so steamed and furious in my life, but also just the audacity that anyone would do that. But it happens constantly.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of this is rooted to, I mean, I often, when that sort of unsolicited advice and opinions and projection of values happens upon me, I just kind of want to scream, you know, like, let me live. Right?
Like, I know what I'm doing.
Also, I am doing the best I can.
Yeah.
And that's another, you know, that's one of the premises of the book, is that I just assume that we are all doing the best we can.
Which is such a powerful assumption, because culturally it often feels like women in general, but also especially mothers, are not. There's this constant kind of level that we're measured against, I think, culturally. It's really challenging.
I mean, I've been having these conversations with people, like, what is this rooted in? You know, this projection of opinions, this, you know, directing pregnant women, policing them.
Yeah.
And I, you know, when I'm feeling really generous, I think it's rooted in, you know, caring about people, seeing that you're doing something amazing. You're guaranteeing the continuation of our species. And so I like to think, you know, because I try to assume good intent, I like to think that it comes from a place of wanting to protect. But it just goes horribly awry.
It does.
You know, and it takes this turn into basically controlling women and not trusting women. And not believing that you can look out for the health of your fetus and also look out for your health and well-being, as though those things are mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, I think that's another part of the book, is that, and I didn't realize it. I said it early on in an interview, and the way the person reacted, I felt like, oh God, like, is this radical? Like, to say that as a mom, you are never any less important than your fetus or your baby.
Yeah.
But I think people need to be told that. I mean, I needed to be told that.
Well, one point that you make throughout the book that I just want to – I'm going to flip to the page, that's so interesting, is we are really not taught as women and as pregnant women what childbirth does to our bodies. We only hear about it, I think, in terms of weight gain and weight loss. Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to gain 40 pounds and then, oh, look at the celebrities who lost all their weight. But we're not taught about the amazing things that happen to our bodies. Like, you talk about breast milk or just the amazing power of the placenta, but we're also not taught about how it can wreck us and how we can physically rebound from that.
Yes, that we, you know, as a species, we are necessarily meant to survive, right? So it is, I mean, you don't want to, I know the what, here's what, you know, I'm even hesitating right now. It's weird. You know, you don't want to talk about all of these things. So you don't want to scare people.
Right.
Right. Like, it's, childbirth is gruesome. It's also really beautiful. But if we talked about it more, then we could also talk about and also better support people through the postpartum period and say, like, yeah, so you're going to bleed for like a month, and that's normal because you just grew a person and there's some stuff in there that needs to come out, right? And, you know, like, people tear and, you know, people have surgery and, like, that takes time to heal. But you can get back to – you can come into a new place.
Yeah.
And you can have a new appreciation for what your body is capable of. You can recover.
Yes.
And I think, you know, we don't talk about that because we don't set people up, you know. This is a thing that I – like, to emphasize, you know, when you have a baby, the baby gets a 1 week and a 2 week and a 1 month and a 2 month and a 6 month and a 9 month and a 1 year wellness checkup. And new parents, new mothers get a 6 week checkup
Yeah,
and that's it.
This crushed me when I was reading this. It
says
so right.
Everything about what our priorities are.
Yeah, and at the often this focus of the 6-week checkup is just you can go have sex.
Oh yeah,
now.
Yeah. Everything looks fine.
Like oh no, my body is ravaged. I mean, I know I had my first child was a C-section. You had a C-section. Mm-hmm. I had a spinal headache following my C-section, which really kind of destroyed just made me feel horrible physically. Yeah. And 6 weeks is not a lot of time to recover from something. Also, you're not sleeping.
Also, you know, you go into it and the focus really isn't on how are you overall as a person,
right?
The other thing is you're just in survival mode. I mean, probably for a few weeks after 6 weeks, but really you don't even know what's going on with your body. You're just trying to get through each day. So you're not going to be able to speak to the intricate feelings that you have and also you get in there and you know you probably have 20 minutes of this person's attention, and so you just want to be like, I'm fine. I feel like my butt is hanging into my vagina, but I think I'm fine, right? We don't talk about this stuff. Because if you were to say, you know, I feel like there's something sagging inside of my vagina, which is, I mean, prolapse is a thing that happens. Sometimes your bladder or your anus can sag in there, and it's a really uncomfortable feeling. And it's also embarrassing, right? But it's very common, and you can recover from that.
Right.
That's the thing, is it's really not, you know, you wouldn't hide the fact that if you ran a marathon that you maybe effed up your hamstring, you know, why be embarrassed?
That's really,
you accomplished something.
Also, we're also taught that everything is supposed to be painful and we just have to kind of live with the pain. I feel like for me with breastfeeding for the first couple of weeks, I felt like every time my child latched on, it felt like not like just shards of glass circling on my nipples, and I was like, well, I guess this is just what it is.
It's beautiful.
This is the magic. And not advocating for us. You know, you talk about your hip pain.
Yeah.
And I speak to tons of women who just had numerous physical ailments or pains after childbirth, and not knowing, not feeling the power to ask for help.
Yeah, I mean, you can go. I mean, I'm a big advocate for everyone going for physical therapy.
Yeah.
After you give birth, and you know, even before, because that's someone looking at and assessing your body and telling you where the strengths and weaknesses are and giving you, think of it as a physical prescription, right, to work on stuff.
Yeah.
But that's available to many people, and oftentimes insurance will cover it, or you just have a small copay. But the thing is, you have to know to ask. No one's going to offer that to you, and so that's why I think, you know, having these conversations with people is really gratifying, and it makes me hopeful, because there are people out there. There are pelvic floor physical therapists who are just waiting to help you, are really excited to help you.
And you kind of make the point that healthcare providers don't really tell us about what happens to our bodies. So oftentimes we're in the dark until it's happening.
Yeah. And I actually think I have a great relationship with my doctor. I see a family physician. Mm. He delivered both of my daughters. He treats my husband. And, you know, I tried to talk to him about my pain, and he really was not dismissive. I felt like he just didn't know.
Yeah.
Because doctors aren't trained to prioritize our health. They're making sure that you're not, you know, nothing seems terribly amiss and that you can have sex, right? Like, as long as that's fine, right? Like, they're just – the emphasis, again, is so clearly on the baby that really mothers – I mean, I think that it also – I mean, this book is mainly about pregnancy, and I included postpartum very specifically because no pregnancy book I read talked to me about that.
No,
everything is on those 40 weeks and birth. That's like where all the glory is. Right.
And it ends the second
and
the
then
child
it's just
comes
sort
out.
Of, yeah, it's just kind of over after that. But I, you know, we just, it's, I don't know, I lost track of what I was saying, but, you know, postpartum is to me a key component of pregnancy. You're not technically pregnant anymore, but it's the effect.
What, since we do talk a lot about caring for ourselves on this podcast, what do you think there are some things that women can do to empower their own self-care after childbirth?
I think, that's a great question.
I mean, that's a very heavy, loaded question.
But. Yeah. I mean, I think realizing that the number one thing is that you need care. you know, and yes, for those first few weeks, you may not have a lot of time for it.
Yeah.
Right. But I think in terms of giving yourself time for recovery, and it's almost easier. I can't believe I'm saying this. I think it's almost easier if you have a C-section because you have had major abdominal surgery. So there is a limitation to what you can do and how much you can move. Right. I was like totally unprepared for my first C-section. And so I didn't really get it. And I was trying to, I mean, everything about caring for a newborn is at odds from recovering.
Yeah.
But, you know, but the second time around, my husband and I went into it like, okay, for the first 2 weeks, like I'm feeding the baby and I'm not moving.
Yeah.
I'm not doing anything else beyond that. So I think really just acknowledging that you need time to recover, that you have gone through an incredible physical devastating thing and creating time for that. And then I think if you can just hold that space, then, you know, it's like light starts to come in and then you might be like, I'm going to take a hot shower for 15 minutes today. Right. And I think just it begins with that. Just knowing that you deserve that.
And the challenge is that we're American. Mm-hmm. So this obviously isn't applicable to everybody listening. So we have international listeners as well, but we exist in a space where a lot of women have to go back to work. There's no paid leave for them.
Yeah,
they're back at work in 2 weeks.
Yeah, 25% of women in America go back to work 2 weeks after they give birth.
Which is unbelievable.
Yeah. I mean, without paid family leave, this is all much harder than it should be.
Yeah.
You know, and other countries have this figured out. Other countries, you know, prioritize that. So we're shamefully behind.
Yeah.
That should definitely – thank you for pointing that out.
I mean, it just is – you know, I remember – I was working for a corporation that had, you know, 6 weeks leave. It had a decent thing, but I ended up having an emergency C-section. And one of the first thoughts I had when they told me I was getting one was, oh, I'll have 2 more weeks of paid leave. Because if you had a C-section, you got more time off than mm-hmm. if you had a vaginal birth.
Yeah.
And I just remember this relief of like, cool, I get 2 more weeks with my baby because I'm having surgery. And that seems like the wrong reaction to have.
It seems like the last thing you should be thinking about,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but it was in the back of my mind.
Yeah, but there's, you know, this is like the structure, the institutions of our society. I mean, when my husband and I are both independent contractors, so we pay a lot of money every month for not really great insurance.
Yeah.
But we're lucky to even be able to do that. But so when I, you know, we were ambivalent for a long time about whether or not we were going to have a second child. And then I got pregnant and then I had experienced another pregnancy loss.
Yeah.
And then also I was like staring down the barrel of 40. So I was kind of like, we got to get this show on the road. We got pregnant. We didn't do a ton of planning. We just kind of were like, this is the time and we're going to see what happens. And so I got pregnant and one of the first things I thought was, oh God, this baby's going to be born in 2018, not instead of 2017. And, you know, we were actually probably going to meet our family deductible for 2017. And it's I feel terrible saying that,
no.
But that's, you know, like I relate to what you said. It's the same thing. Like we're not allowed to focus on just the what's happening.
Yeah.
Or be excited or focus on what we need. We're thinking about because our, you know, the way our American society is set up is it does not support women. You know, actually, we hate women.
that's a good way of putting it.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it feels like. That's
I
believe that that's true. And I don't want to seem, you know, I always want to be hopeful.
Yeah.
But I think that's a reality that we can't afford to overlook.
Well, one of the craziest statistics is that we have the highest rate of maternal deaths of all developed nations in the world. Yeah. And then that increases for women of color.
Yes.
Which is a crisis.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think we talk about the opioid epidemic in this country. Like we have an epidemic of Black women dying.
Yeah.
And we have an epidemic of women of color having far less access to prenatal care and having much poorer obstetrical outcomes. And so that's something that we need to talk about. It's, again, shameful.
Yeah. Mm. One of the interesting points you make in the book is that when women were asked about their experience giving birth – hold on. I have to just find the page. This was really, really interesting to me. It was a person doing research on childbirth, and they realized that it was not the physical act of birth – I'm quoting – itself that held the most potent memories for women, but the way they were cared for before, during, and after birth. And that – I mean, I have chills now just saying that because so often we share these birth stories, mm-hmm. And we can have a really challenging, harrowing birth. But if we were cared for lovingly and felt seen and heard and supported, yeah. we frame it in a positive way. And I thought that was so interesting, is that it's the care we receive that shapes the experience.
Yeah, it's so basic. And we've moved so far away from it. And so, and that ties in nicely with, you know, the idea of self-care, right?
That's, yeah.
But you also, you need other people to care for you. And that's how you show, I mean, it's really how you show someone that you love them.
Yeah.
It's how
yeah.
we express that. And I think as a society, it feels like we're moving away, you know, like you can have dinner delivered, you can have someone pick you up, you can send your laundry away. Like these basic things that we do for ourselves and for each other are slipping away, you know, I think in a larger sense, but definitely in terms of caring for mothers and pregnant women. And it feels like it doesn't cost that much. It doesn't cost anything. You know, it's a very simple act to listen
yeah.
to when someone is saying this doesn't feel right, to make sure that someone is an active decision maker and participant in their own care makes all the difference.
I mean, when you talk about the birth plan, which is a big part, I think, for people giving birth.
Yeah.
And it does kind of provide a false sense of control because you ultimately have no control over how your child's going to come out of your body.
Yeah.
And it can be very like you have to let that go. I mean, you talk about your own experience with that.
Yes, I had a very well edited to one page Times New Roman 12. Like it was like bullet pointed. It began by thanking the people who were caring for
yeah.
me because I thought that might buy me some goodwill in terms of I don't know what. Right. But I put a lot of effort into it. I mean, I'm a writer, so I think like some like words matter in the way I presented things. But I mean, basically, I watched over the course of like 72 hours, like my birth plan go up in flames.
Totally. You know? The ash spreading.
Really, I think a birth plan can be useful. I think it helps you clarify things, but you need to really be able to let go. This is, it's sort of the great mystery of life. It's a totally uncontrollable thing.
Yeah.
And you have to really be open to what happens.
I wanted to touch upon, you can see I starred this numerous times. I'm just showing Angela what I wrote in her book, which is a thing I think a lot of women, there's a situation, a feeling for me at least, where you kind of can't win. And that is when you talk about the mixed messages about the right and wrong way to be and become a mother. Whereas on one side, unmedicated birth is portrayed as like natural and women are like, you know, naked in a field with like a flowing gown. And then, giving birth, you know, a more like a medical birth in a hospital is wrong. But then women who do, let's say, have a home birth are portrayed as danger. I mean, there's constant conflicting messages where it starts to feel like no matter what decision you make as a mother, it's wrong. And I think this is a way we're also made to feel about breastfeeding, formula feeding, how like you kind of can't win.
No, you can't. And that's why – and it's so hard. It's so deeply ingrained in us.
Yeah.
And that's really how we frame every conversation. And so what I wanted in this book, you know, the book turned into something much more personal than I expected it to. I mean, I did not pitch it. I mean, I just never assumed that anyone would be that interested in my own story, right? Like I was – you know, I wanted to explore this stuff scientifically, more journalistically. And – as I was writing it, I realized though if this stuff is so personal.
Yeah.
And the only reason, this is not a complete guide to pregnancy in any way.
Of course.
It was very much guided by my own experiences and my own interests. And I just realized it almost felt disingenuous not to share what my experience had been. You know, like I had a cesarean section after really wanting a vaginal birth. So I'm one of those people where we give birth two ways now. I'm grateful for what I had. I sort of feel sad that I didn't have this, but one is not better than the other and one is not right and one is not wrong. And that's really, I wanted to try, like, why aren't all pregnancy books written this way?
Yeah.
You know, like that was really, I just feel like if we gave people information in a more straightforward way, in a way that allowed them to feel confident, trusting that they could make the best decision for themselves, which is not going to be the best decision for somebody else, we'd care a lot less about what other people were doing.
Yeah, we would.
You know, we would just be – we'd be cool.
One thing that I also really, really, really resonated with me is you talk very you kind of get into journalistically the amazing ability of the placenta and also what breast milk can do. And I believe it was about the placenta, although tell me if I'm wrong, that it basically hasn't been researched, or maybe it's about breast milk. There's one point you make in the book where, like, this is not – nobody's researched this, so we don't really know the power of this organ.
I mean, that's actually – it's true for both.
Yeah.
And that was something – you know, the fact that the book became – the subtitle is A Feminist Journey Through the Science and Culture of Pregnancy, that, again, was not how I pitched the book. It was something that when I started when I started researching female reproductive health, I found experts, scientists, healthcare providers, and all of them said some version of the same thing, whether or not – whether it was about the placenta or breast milk or microchimerism, which is when maternal and fetal cells exchange and go and live in each other's bodies, which is – whoa. But everyone was like, yeah, so I thought that this would be interesting to study, and so I went to the literature – and there wasn't anything. And some of them were even actively discouraged by colleagues or mentors not to study this stuff. And so feminists came into play because, you know, the basic definition being we're equal.
Right.
And we are equally deserving of care and respect. And we're so far from there. We have never valued female reproductive health enough financially, culturally, scientifically to study it.
Yeah.
And they all my experts also said, you know, compared to what we should know, we know nothing.
Oh boy. That's rage inducing.
Yeah. I feel sort of like, you know, on a show about self-care, I feel like I don't really like to sit around talking about all the terrible things.
Well, but what is cool to me is that our bodies are capable. I mean, that's kind of the underlying current, I feel like, of the book is like our bodies are doing some cool ass stuff.
Yeah.
And celebrating that and educating ourselves. I didn't really know that I was going to have to birth a placenta.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe somebody listening doesn't know that if you have a vaginal birth, you're going to put – after your baby comes out, most of the time, I think, you're going to push the placenta out.
Oh, yeah. You're not done.
No. And then you're if you have a C-section, they take it out as after they take your baby out. And it's this huge, heavy thing.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people aren't given a chance to see it.
Yeah.
Or really learn much about it.
Or when it's referred to just as medical waste.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this thing just, like, fed my child for nine months,
before my child had a heart, lungs, or kidney, or liver, this – organ that the single use organ that I grew from scratch along with it served as all of those things.
Yeah, I mean that is fucking cool. Like we're cool.
Yeah, I mean that's really, you know, like, you know, alternate title of the book is, you know, female bodies. You know, like they're fucking incredible.
Yeah.
And that's really, you know, like that's at the root of the book as well, like an appreciation for our bodies. Because we're really taught not to like them. We're taught to criticize them. We're not taught to celebrate them. We're taught to feel really weird about them.
Yeah.
You know, and I think I always love it when I meet people who, and I'm always sort of jealous and I don't understand it when someone just seems really confident in their body.
Yeah.
And it makes me so happy for them, but also I'm like, what, how did they get that?
Well, that's one thing that I really connected with was thinking about the change. I don't think we are given a space to talk about the changes our bodies go through after childbirth beyond just gaining weight.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas our bodies have shifted physically. We've had surgery, like you said, prolapse. I mean, and that was really empowering to me that we can have a dialogue about all the other changes we go through physically beyond just, oh, I put on 40 pounds or 60 pounds or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's not a focus culturally that women go through all sorts of other changes.
Yeah.
And learning to love those and come out on the other side.
Yeah. I mean, I feel very close to Beyonce this week.
Oh, God. Beyonce nailed it.
Beyonce talked. I mean, I love that she's talking about her little fupa in Vogue. And she's like, me and my little fupa are meant to be.
Yes.
You know, that is – and I love putting it that way because there's no fighting that. I mean, that's a natural byproduct of – the transformation that your body goes through in being pregnant and giving birth. And it's about finding – you will come back to yourself, but you might not be where you were before. You're standing in a new place. And instead of fearing that, maybe we could appreciate that.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Beyonce also talked about pregnancy loss, I believe. You talked about pregnancy loss in your book, and it's still such – I think in the past few years we've become more open in discussing it. But I'm curious if you could kind of – and maybe from a self-care perspective, talk about how did you care for yourself going through? I mean, I think you actually talk about changing the word from miscarriage.
Yeah. I'm actually trying really hard to only say pregnancy loss. Yeah. I'm not 100% on that yet.
But
I'm practicing, you know, my they, them pronoun. There's all these things that I'm trying to work on that cost me nothing. They're right. Just like
changing
things that are ingrained
how
in
we
me.
Say it. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, just to speak to that, I mean, miscarriage, it has the same prefix as mistake, misspell, and these are really implies something that you did, right, to create a bad situation.
Yeah.
And the reality is that when you lose a pregnancy, the overwhelming majority of them are caused by chromosomal abnormalities that you have no control over. And so the woman that I spoke to, my pregnancy loss expert, who's one of the only people who has done extensive research on how to care for women who have experienced this, she said something that just rocked my world, that seemed very revolutionary to me, where she said, you know, the body is wise and it recognizes a pregnancy that cannot be carried to term. And I thought, God, like, could that help? That would have helped me. It did help me even, you know, more than a year later, framing this where it's different for everybody, but most people experience some level of grief. And sometimes that grief is confusing because it wasn't a baby. You know what I mean? Like, it's a sort of in-between thing and no one else is talking about it and no one knows how to really speak about it. But the idea, like, could you be helped through grief by realizing that as sad as this is, that's always true, that also you can appreciate your body for taking care of this situation, you know, that was untenable. That, I think, from a self-care perspective, is to figure out how to appreciate your body even in one of the hardest of times could really be a game changer.
That's really powerful. And also when your body is not doing what you want it to do.
Right. I mean, it very rarely does.
No. So. That is true. But that is, it's such an interesting the way that we are conditioned to not speak about being pregnant until we're out of the first trimester. So women kind of suffer quietly through a lot of symptoms. And then if you miscarry, oftentimes or lose the pregnancy, as I'm going to also try to change how I'm saying it, but you then go through that silently. Maybe you don't tell anyone. Maybe no one knew you were pregnant to begin with. And even when it's, you know, or oftentimes there's this idea of like, well, you were 8 weeks along. Like, you weren't,
like,
you know. And
the worst thing to say.
Yeah, I mean, there's just – I think the depth of the grief that can come along with losing a pregnancy hasn't fully been acknowledged.
Yeah.
And I think it's time that is really
– Yeah, I mean, let's think about it. It's this quote unquote rule that we all are familiar with, which is you don't tell anyone that you're pregnant until after your first trimester. Why? Because you might lose the pregnancy. Because it's fairly common.
Right.
25% of all known pregnancies end in loss. And so it's one, it creates this rule around something that's actually really common, saying that we can't talk about this thing that's happening to many people that you know. And then you're, because you haven't told anyone, you're totally alone. Because then you have to be like, oh, so I was pregnant and now I'm not. And that's a lot to lay on someone.
Yeah. Right?
And you know, your good friends will be there for you through that, but it's a doozy of a conversation to start.
And who put that rule into place? Like, yeah, why did we decide?
Who is that guy?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's a guy.
Definitely. I mean, it's a strange thing. I don't know if we're trying to protect people from sadness. I'm not quite sure what it is. But
I mean, I think it's probably rooted in the fact that as a culture, we're just bad at talking about difficult things and loss. And grief and vaginas.
And vaginas. And sometimes vaginas and grief go hand in hand.
Yes.
You are a mother. You have two kids. You are working. Right now you're traveling away from your family. I'm curious about what kind of self-care stuff you implement, whether it's around motherhood or just for your not at all having to do with your children. What are some of your self-care rituals?
Yeah. My baby is 5 months old, so I haven't really had a lot of time. The best thing I did for myself was to remain as immobile as possible for the first 2 weeks after giving birth. The main thing that I do for myself is I move, and I love to dance.
You talk about this in the book.
Yeah, and that was a big part of my spiritual, I'd say, recovery, even more than physical. I had this chronic hip pain that I thought I had solved by going to this class called Dance Church, which is, you know, it's basically like guided improv, mostly to like Beyonce and dance music and Rihanna and Missy
amazing.
And that kind of thing. And yeah, you just get sweaty. And when I first started going, I just felt really – I wrote about this. I remember that like the instructor was like, grind your crotch down into the floor. And someone next to me was like, and I was like, this is literally the easiest thing that has been asked of my crotchal area in years. So I just was like, let me just hump this floor. And that felt so great. And I think, you know, I was trying to make sense of my body, and it helped me. I am a much more embodied person dancing regularly and feeling really free and letting go. So that's been a huge part of it. And in my second pregnancy, I was dancing at 39 weeks.
Wow.
And I never would have done that my first time around. And you know, I was modifying the hell out of the moves.
Sure,
and, you know,
sure.
There's a whole section on the floor where we're doing ab work. And I was like, I can feel my abs separating right now. So I'm not going to do that. But anything that I could do that made me feel like myself was really important. And so I was able to start dancing again, I think like 6 or 7 weeks after I gave birth and taking it easy. But movement is that's my number one thing. And I don't call it exercise because I hate that term. You know, like to me, it's movement, and that makes me feel free and powerful. And then when, you know, if I have time, I like to go to, I love a Korean spa.
Oh,
and I have not been scrubbed in far too long, so I'm ready to shed a layer of my skin.
I mean,
but there's, yeah.
I can give you a spot in LA if you have a couple.
Really? I'm in Koreatown.
So. I know. I have it. We're going to talk
okay,
after this
great.
Podcast. I got some spots for you.
But something like that, I mean, and there's also when I can't, I mean, it's sort of a longer venture for me to get to the Korean spa in the Seattle area. But there's a little spa in close to my neighborhood that's women only. It's called the Hot House, and
Ooh.
It's underneath one of the only lesbian bars in Seattle.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Although I'm sad that there's only really one lesbian bar in Seattle.
Yeah, there should be more.
So it's underneath the Wild Rose, yes. And you go underneath there, and I've been going there for almost 20 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's just got one whirlpool, one steam sauna, one dry sauna, and just an area where you can lay down. And usually it's me, like, starfished out, totally nude, like just going comatose and probably snoring for like 10 or 15 minutes. It's always part of what happens when I go there. I just knock out.
Me too.
But I find that, you know, my brain is always thinking about my kids or my own stuff, and I have a hard time quieting it.
Yeah.
So physical movement always helps me, and then getting into like it's basically a sensory deprivation tank. I find that maybe it's sort of two poles, but those are probably my two self-care things. I'm wearing my pair of, I recently bought white Crocs.
I love them. Hold on. I'm just going to bend down and look at them. You know,
they're ugly. Let's be honest.
They're not. They're cool. I also think you are the second guest to come on this podcast in white Crocs.
Oh, really?
I'm pretty sure Mary H.K. Choi also wore white Crocs.
Oh, that's really exciting. Which I think of her as very stylish person.
Is. Yes. Yes. That might be the official shoe of this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I really, like, I was a Croc hater for a long time, and then I don't know. I mean, I guess the secret's out. I've given up in some ways.
Or is giving up actually just embracing another side of things?
It's embracing another side of it, for sure. I mean, I think that I'm 40 now too. So I'm into my own resource and energy management. And there's and I was thinking about this a lot when I had a newborn and a toddler. There's only a certain amount of energy and a certain amount of fucks that I have in one day. And when it's gone, it's gone. And I don't always know when that's going to happen. And so
could be at 10 a.m.
Yeah. But so in terms of the Crocs, I literally texted a friend who's more stylish than me and was like, thinking about Crocs, talk me out of it. And he was like, not going to do it.
Wow.
And he like made the case. And I got them and I decided to get white because I was like, go big or go home. And now I literally feel like I'm walking around on clouds.
They're super stylish. I actually think they're stylish. Maybe that's also a sign of where I am in my life. But
well, you should join me because my style motto for postpartum 2018 and probably beyond is casually bedridden. Like, it's a choice.
It is. I am in like basically a nightgown today, and it comes with a belt, and I never wear it, this dress I'm in. Because who the fuck needs
that?
Well,
when you came around the corner in it, I was like, well, here she is floating to me.
Oh, thank you.
Like a vision. And I felt very jealous.
I tell you what, I am so comfortable in this thing, this beautiful sack that I'm wearing. Well, Angela, this has been such a joy to get to talk to you. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you just in the digital space?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm on Instagram, which is where I have the most fun social media wise.
Great.
It's just my name, Angela Garbez. I am on Twitter, A. Garbez, but I feel like that's sort of I have a journalistic responsibility to be on Twitter.
Yes, but we're all kind of leaving, I think, is what's happening.
And then I have a website, and I do a monthly-ish newsletter.
Ah, can we get that on your website?
Yes, you can. Yeah. It's a tiny letter called Don't Need a Reason, my alter ego.
And the book is Like a Mother. And you can get that at any independent bookseller, any big box bookseller.
Yes.
It's everywhere.
Yes. Retailers, your choice of retailers, wherever.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much, Angela.
Thank you so much for having me on.
This has been great.
Kate, let's talk about intentions.
I would love that. But can I just add something that I've been thinking about?
Yes.
About underwear?
Yes.
Because I don't think I want to make sure that I'm not dismissing the idea of underwear being empowering for people.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because I feel like sexy underwear or different styles of underwear hasn't always been made or available for women of all different sizes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like oftentimes it was just an option if you were like a size 8 or less.
Right, right, right.
And so I feel like underwear can and should be embraced as a form of self-expression.
I love that.
And also should make us feel comfortable and confident in whatever we're wearing and when we go out into the world.
Yes.
Am I making sense?
You are.
I just don't want to be like dismissive of anyone who does want to fucking thong it up.
Yeah. Thong it up.
Thong it up. Just, I'm not. I'm wearing my giant Costco underwear. Anyway, Dory.
Yes.
That my intention is not that. My intention last week was to get my sleep and anxiety under control.
How'd that go?
Well, I did install a home alarm system,
mm-hmm.
which you may now see all over mm-hmm. my home.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of helped me feel safe while my husband is out of town. I just always feel extra nervous when I'm the only adult in my home. That's how I've always felt my whole life. So that did feel good.
Good.
Yeah. Then once I got that in, and once I get my Ring doorbell installed, not an ad, just a thing I bought,
mm-hmm.
I think that will be kind of nice.
We have a Ring doorbell.
Yeah. Now, are these things are effective deterrents? I don't know, but they are effective in calming my anxiety.
They bring you peace of mind.
Thank you. Yeah, so that's what I did. How was it trying not to overplan with your parents? That was your intention last week.
Yeah. So, you know, I did plan a bunch of stuff. And then, as discussed, I got very exhausted yesterday with all of the activities. And we don't have anything like formal, another formal thing planned until tomorrow night. And my mom was like, am I going to see you before then? And so I'm like, maybe I should just, they came over for dinner on Friday night. Like we just got takeout. And that was actually really nice because it was like lower stakes than like a restaurant and we could just kind of relax and the weather was really nice. So I might do that again tonight.
Okay.
Just be spontaneous.
Play it by ear.
Yeah. I got my dad on the guest list at our gym, my
nice.
Gym. So he's very excited about that.
Because your dad's a workout guy.
My dad is jacked.
Your dad is my inspiration.
He's 73.
And he's ripped.
Yes.
That's amazing.
It's weird. What is your intention this week?
Well, I wrote down to keep working on my social anxiety.
Great.
But I thought of another one today.
Okay.
Which is I need to foam roll.
Mm.
I always like tell, every time I'm in physical therapy, they're like, foam roll. And I'm like, you got it. I will. And then I never do.
I have the same experience. I even own a foam roller.
Same. I own a foam roller. Yeah. I've bought them and thrown them out and bought them again. And, but my, I do have like sore muscles and spots where I really think it would help. I just have to make the commitment. And I know it is as easy as like putting a yoga mat down and watching a TV show and rolling around, but I never do it. I want to sit on the couch.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know,
I will say joining a gym has helped me in this regard because they have like an area where people foam roll and I'm like, all right, I'll just foam roll a little bit. And like, it does feel good.
I know. And I'm, you know, I'm not getting any younger. My body needs to be stretched and
it does
rolled, caressed by the Amazon foam roller I bought 6 months ago and have never used. So that is, I think, something I'm going to try to do like just once. I just need to start. I need to just form the habit, you know, and you just have to like literally roll it out.
Totally.
How about you?
Well, this intention is sort of related to last week's intention.
Okay.
I'm going away.
Yes.
And I'm going to New York and I have reached out to friends there to see them. And I'm like cramming all this. I'm not going to be there for that long. I'm cramming a bunch of things in. It'll be fine. I feel like I'm sort of now at the point where I'm like, am I forgetting anyone?
And then you feel guilty if you do.
And then you feel guilty. Yeah. Actually it's like sort of worked out because a lot of my friends are going to be out of town. Everyone's like, oh, that's the 1 week I'll be away. Which is like sad, but also means I don't have to like cram that many people.
Yeah.
In. So I'm going to just try and like enjoy the time I have with my friends who I don't get to see very much and just like see it as like a great, relaxing, positive thing.
Friends, this is the time where we say goodbye.
Yes.
We have a voicemail. If you ever want to call us, it's 781-591-0390. And our email is forever35podcast@gmail.com. You can join our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/forever35podcast.
Also, if you really like the show, please leave us a rating and or review on Apple Podcasts. Also tell a friend, talk about us on social media. We won't be mad about it. And a reminder that everything we talk about is always on our website, forever35podcast.com. And you can follow us on Instagram @forever35podcast and on Twitter @forever35pod. And we will talk to you next week.